You're listening to CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal.
What's up, good people? To those of you listening wherever, whenever, whatever time it is, good morning, good evening, and good night. You are locked into another Tuesday evening with Soul Perspectives right here on CKUT 90.3 FM. Soul P has been on the air since 1994. We bring you all the topics, the guests, the ups and downs, the highs and the lows of the black community here in Montreal, across Canada, and internationally. We have a beautiful evening of music and discussion lined up for you tonight. Keep it locked. You are listening to Soul Perspectives right here on CKUT 90.3 on your FM dial.
I will be one of the greatest, that is a vow, yeah, that is a promise. Always wanted to be famous, just being real, yeah, just being honest. My haters won't always be nameless, give them no clout, I give them no power. Creators built different than ancient, sooner than later, all will be ours. I keep an eye out for the numbers, I stay in contact, synchronization. To infinity, even beyond it, I am a common, no destination. A lot of things I am above, and there are a lot of things that are above me. Do not come for the people I love, cause then I get scary, then I get uglier. Ain't no problem. Presence noted, observation. I'm not new here, reborn creation. Come and find me, standing location.
I love him. She loves him not. He loves him. He loves me not. They love them. They love us not. I love her. He loves us not.
Won't you take my hand? You take my breath away. Hey, 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 hey,
they really like him. She really likes them not.
Yes, we're back. You are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM. My name is Kim Dominique Ferguson, and my guest this evening is Monday, who is a retired showgirl turned jewelry designer. This two-spirit Afro-Indigenous Eve Sekwemek, multidisciplinary artist and entrepreneur, is a force to be reckoned with. Monday is a member of the Virago Nation, Turtle Island's first all-Indigenous burlesque troupe on a mission to reclaim Indigenous sexuality from the toxic effects of colonization, and signed with Supernaturals Modeling. Her most recent endeavors include founding her new jewelry line, Monday May Jewelry. Monday, thank you so much for being here this evening. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
It's a pleasure. You know, we're on this strange cusp of, like, we're not in a pandemic anymore. We're still in a pandemic. People don't know, like, we don't know whether we're coming or going for this thing.
True.
Like, oh, everything is open. No, actually, we're going to close it back. But the last 2 years did happen. 2020 happened. 2021 happened. How were those for you? Because you're an entrepreneur, you do things on your own. So how did the time during the pandemic affect you?
the pandemic rocked my world in a number of ways.
Yeah.
Just like everyone else, you know, having to deal with all this newness. Mm-hmm. But I was also diagnosed with lupus right at the beginning of the pandemic. The pandemic hit, and then I was diagnosed a month later. So I was dealing with a new medical condition and being immunocompromised.
Mm.
As well as having been a full-time artist prior to the pandemic that was touring the country and like had gig offers in the States and whatnot. And as soon as everything hit, everything shut down. And just that existential crisis of identity, like many people had.
Definitely. And so, what were some of the things that you had to do in order to adapt?
In order to adapt, I had to just think on my toes. I think my first concern was financially, because we weren't sure if CERB was coming through yet.
Mm-hmm.
We were all just kind of like in limbo. So I remember having to pivot really quickly and just hustle in terms of finding some coin and making cash and just making sure I could pay my rent and
right. And
have food and whatnot. But luckily, when CERB came through, it was very helpful to a lot of artists, including myself.
Okay. And were you able to find a way to keep working artistically as well?
I did. So in the past 2 years, I pivoted probably at least twice. Okay. And ended up where I am today with my jewelry business.
Mm-hmm.
But I've been working for myself and having to just like hustle. You know, I came from, my background is kind of odd in a sense, just because my parents split. So I grew up in two kind of families, but I've experienced poverty. Like I've had to just kind of like make my way and survive.
Yes.
And so I was able to tap into those tools that I had
into that survival instinct almost.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Can you tell us a little bit about the Virago Nation? Tell us a little bit about that troupe.
Yeah, so Virago Nation was founded in 2016. And initially they were a group of five or six. I'm fairly new to it. So I came in 2020 when the pandemic hit as well. That's when I was signed with Virago Nation.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's an all indigenous, Turtle Island's first all indigenous burlesque troupe.
Mm-hmm.
And they were voted top 50 in the world and have just done a bunch of really, really cool stuff even before I got there.
Mm-hmm.
So very admirable, and I was very, it's an honor to be included with them, and some of the work that's being done is really, really important in Indigenous communities. So.
Yeah, your bio says it's to reclaim Indigenous sexuality from the toxic effects of colonization. Can you just elaborate a little bit on that?
Yeah, so I'll stumble on this one because I feel like I embody these, but I still haven't grasped my words around it. But my thought is that we are trying to create a space that would be kind of indicative of pre-contact,
right,
where like relationships with our bodies, relationships with sexuality, all these things weren't influenced by colonialism and shame and all those fun things that come along with that.
Right. Right. Has entrepreneurship always been a part of your life?
No, it hasn't. So okay. Entrepreneurship came into my life in 2013.
Mm-hmm.
And I had burned out. I was following like a regular, quote unquote, regular. I went to university. I was going to be a social worker. I got this like cushy social work job that was funded really great and had a company car, all this stuff.
Wow.
And then it just kind of all crumbled. Like we started losing funding just because the government changed. I couldn't help people the way I wanted to help people. And I burnt out like for real. And sold all of my stuff and moved to London. And it was just like.
It's made just a complete change.
Yeah, exactly. And so when I came back to Canada, I just had a really
You
meant
London, England.
Yeah, I went all the way.
You're like, I'm changing countries. This is crazy.
So when I came back, I just had this really poor relationship with money that I needed to rebuild. Because to me, in my mind, like capitalism and all that stuff is what ruined, quote unquote, this belief that I had that like once I had the job, once I had the car, everything was going to be good, right? Like that's what everybody told me is that that's what.
Yeah. That's you what know, you were, you're aiming for. That's your goal, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So I came back and then I was like, okay, well, maybe if I just start trying to work for myself, I can find some kind of resolve. I don't know if that's the right word, but just like, you know, enjoy life again. And so I started and started small just in being an admin assistant, contracting myself out. And then it just kind of grew. And eventually now I am a full-time artistic entrepreneur and things are going better than I could have ever imagined them going.
And was artistically, was it like visual arts? Was it the jewelry? Was it the burlesque dancing? Where did you first start off artistically?
Artistically, I've always been doing something artistically. So as a professional, like making money, it started with burlesque. But prior to that, I've done tons of music, like visual arts, drawing and whatnot. Like I've always just been in the arts in one way or another.
Mm-hmm. And how did you come to burlesque?
Burlesque is kind of funny. I always laugh when I tell this story because it's kind of silly. I went down to Burning Man 1 year in 2011. And that year I went by myself. And just with the idea, I guess, that whatever I would need would find me and that I am just showing up as myself and that's kind of good enough. Mm-hmm. And then figuring out the lay of the land and then next year I'd bring down something, you know, to give. And so I had a great time and I went home that year just being open to my art form because I didn't know what I was going to contribute.
Right.
And yeah, within that 12 months, I ended up randomly joining a class. And then that just led to me being curious and interested. And then another class showed up and I joined that one. And yeah, the rest is kind of history. It was almost a decade ago now.
Mm-hmm. I've been hearing about Burning Man a lot, like in the media and also in movies people are talking about. What is this Burning Man? What is this? It's an annual event, I believe.
It is. It's an annual event that happens in Nevada in a desert, Black Rock. And it's an arts festival, I think is what they describe it as.
Okay.
And so it's huge. It's essentially like a city of people that turns up in the middle of the desert for that week, plus their building time and tear down time. And it's really cool in a sense because the scale of everything is just stuff that you can only dream about and only imagine. And it's a full gifting community, so you don't pay for anything except for ice when you're out there. Everything.
Ice, okay.
Yeah.
The most precious commodity in the desert.
Yeah, exactly. Or I think there's a coffee shop too. That's the only thing that.
Right.
But everything else is gifted. So it's just like a really neat human experience to have.
And yeah. and is there any, because I remember I don't know if it was in a movie or in a show, I remember there was some element of actually burning something. Is that something
yes.
that's a, okay.
Yeah, so, we burn a lot. Okay. A lot of things. There is the actual man, which is like I don't know if the size changes every year, but I was reading somewhere that it's like 40-foot man, and it's just like every year they make a different art installation around it, so okay. depending on what the theme is, and
yeah.
and so that's the big burn on Saturday night, and it's huge, like it's ridiculous. Okay. and so many other things, like there are burns that happen. People bring their art projects down and then build them in the desert, and some of them are meant to be burnt as well. And so,
as it's very symbolic of life and death. I mean, it has very very spiritual symbolism in it to go out into the desert to build something up, and then at the end of 7 days or whatever time it takes to like. Burn it down, and it'll never exist anywhere except maybe in photos and images, video, or something like that. But that's a very spiritual thing to do. Was that something very conscious that the organizers set out as an intention?
You know, I would like to think so, mm-hmm. but I'm not 100% sure. So, I also agree. I think it's really cool in terms of like. Getting people on board with kind of letting go of attachment. I think mm-hmm. a lot of the times we like to think things are permanent and here to stay, or that. But yeah, that idea that we're gonna spend all these hours, all this time, and all these resources, and then we're gonna let it go, is an interesting practice
mm-hmm.
that I think is really valuable.
And how does that how did that resonate with you?
It resonated a lot. Like it has influenced, I guess, the way that I move in the world in terms of knowing that nothing is permanent and making peace with that while moving through the world.
Wow. That is I hate to use this word always, but that's hella deep. That's the best way to sum it up, because, you know, it's a reality that a lot of us can't accept. I mean, we hold on to pictures like there was an article or a documentary that I once saw, and like a husband and wife are caught in a fire, and the wife goes for like the photo albums. The memories, the things that you can never reclaim. And the husband is just like, what's the important stuff? And try to get the kids out and get the wife out. And the wife is just like, our memories got to hold on to that. And it's such a true thing, because you can't hold on to people forever. You can't hold on to memories forever. You know, eventually, whether it is they're burnt down or whether it is by natural decay, everything eventually vanishes, and eventually, you know, ashes to ashes, dust to dust type of situation. I have some books that I've been reading since the early 2000s, and I've read them so many times, I had to buy back the same books, and yeah. I refuse to like throw away the old books because I'm so attached to them. So it's very interesting to see that there's this artistic ritual of creating, displaying, and so giving it life, and then destroying at the end of that life cycle, so to speak. That's very powerful. I'm just getting chills thinking about it. Just in case you're tuning in for the first time, we are speaking to Monday, who is a retired showgirl turned jewelry designer. She is also a member of the Virago Nation, Turtle Island's first all-Indigenous burlesque troupe on a mission to reclaim Indigenous sexuality from the toxic effects of colonization. You are listening to Soul Perspectives, and we're going to take a quick break and come back. You are on CKUT 90.3 FM.
Bismillah. Hey. Showing living by the G code. What the f is fleek though? Don't ask them, what do he know? What I forgot is better than whatever they remember. Never mind, I'm off it, it's quiet form. Time to put the temper tantrums to the quiet corner. Hush! That's enough, said the ruler. No suckers allowed to break bread or asunder. The daylight, lightning and the thunder. Sun, moon, the stars and the hunger. Abundance in bundles. Blessings in troubles. Towers and tunnels, views and valleys, waves and peaks. Streaks you from sun.
Stepped on the scene, it's the bloke from the 4-3 double O, about to go hectic. I triggered all of these dogs, cause my bar's too heavy like a deadlight. Got a proton flow, it's electric, finna go reckless, you already know who the best, that's me. These rappers are all for the show, somebody put a mic on left, put them up. Since when do we ever need shakes? Since when? Or need to run with a gun? Never. I was taught when the beef comes round, put your 2 feet down, have a one-on-one. That's us. Nowadays everybody has a knife, hey. Stick it in the air like curry. Nowadays everybody wants smoke, like who wants smoke? Give them a dolly, I'm different, brother, I'm different. Take a little trip to the west side of Brisbane. Come the boys in the back, never stay distant. Yeah. LMA bars, how I got them all tripping. My doctor told me, listen, cause you gotta let them know. Let them know. So I stepped up to the plate and told my doctor, fucking no. Now I'm kicking back, making tracks for the hood, cuz. Making all these other clowns here look dumb. Aye. Everybody just wants to be a hoodlum. Fill them up deep, cause they looking like shook. Like shook. I'm down for the hood. 4-3 shit, let them know what's good. What's good? Bar after bar, but they all look shook. And a middle finger up to this bitch ass six. Hey.
Don't fuck me, bro. Hey. Look.
Tell them come get me. I swear they'll never forget me. Must be teachers the way they want to test me. Let them hate cause the flow's too hefty. Hop on the mic and you better come secchi. Hey. Look. Better say that shit with your chest. If not, then you better say less. Say less. Brisbane coming up from the west. Say my name out loud so you know who's next. Better say that shit with your chest. Aye. If not, then you better say less. Aye. That's enough for sending the threats. Come round here and you know what's next. From Monday to Friday, I'm steady trying to make this stop. And I swear that I'm always offside because I'm always in front.
Bloody moose leg hanging, shoe ripped tear with my young wolves ganging, snare wire loops on a cold moon snagging, breaking down the troop while they puke booze gagging. My sister got the boost from the cops right around the block, labeled her a prostitute, not a few they wanna drop. I've been at it since a manic youth in a padded room, panic button in my attitude, getting mad at you. Running through the six with my res dogs, got a politic, this is it, ain't no man's dog in my nose dog, cause I goes off, ain't no doze off, this is wide awake, making it my Mozart. All the stress upon my plate got me twisted like a false face. Systematic state got me wishing on it. So I'm switching fate. I'm spreading love, not hate.
Since I was YO, used to be locked in a box and watch your time go. Now I stay copping the guap but try and fly low. Always been solid as rock, like a rhino. So I kept my people's respect and some.
Bring a whole lot, bring a whole lot of a ton of bugs. There might be 50 of y'all, but there's a ton of us. Cold in the winter, ready for summer bar. Heavy season, with a ton of trucks. Yeah, a ton of bugs. Bring a whole lot of, a ton of bar. Bring a whole lot of, a ton of bar. It might be 50 of y'all, but there's a ton of us. Bring another scale.
Bring it.
It's too heavy. Bring another scale. A crump way too heavy. Bring another scale.
Damn. This is too heavy. Damn. This is too heavy. My crump is way too heavy. Bring another scale.
Bring it.
It's too heavy. I said bring another scale.
Another one.
My crump is way too heavy. Bring another scale. This is too heavy. This is too heavy. Man, it's too heavy. Bring a whole lot of
it. A lot of it.
A ton of bug. It might be 50, y'all.
50, y'all.
There's a ton of us. Cool in the winter. Ready for summer bug.
Keep it cool, boy.
Heavy season. With a ton of trucks.
Damn.
Oh. A ton of bug. Bring a whole lot of. A ton of bug.
Yeah.
Bring a whole lot of. A ton of bug. It might be 50, y'all.
Uh-huh.
But there's a ton of bug.
There's a lot going on in the world today. See how it affects Montreal's Black and Caribbean community. Read the community contact. News, features, opinions, music reviews, cultural events, and so much more. Our voices, our perspectives, our community. Published every 2 weeks, pick it up at your favorite community spot or visit us online at our new and dynamic website, mtlcommunitycontact.com. Easy to navigate and lots to enjoy. Archived issues also on the site and available on the web. That's mtlcommunitycontact.com. Stay in contact.
Yes, 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 we're back, we're back, we're back. You are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM. My name is Kim Dominique Ferguson, and this evening my guest is a two-spirit Afro-Indigenous Eve Sekwemek, multidisciplinary artist and entrepreneur who is a force to be reckoned with. She's a member of the Virago Nation, Turtle Island's first all-Indigenous burlesque troupe, on a mission to reclaim Indigenous sexuality from the toxic effects of colonization, and signed with Supernatural Modelings. Her most recent endeavors include founding her new jewelry line, Monday May Jewelry. Monday, thank you so much for being here and for talking with us. So before the break, we spoke a lot about your artistic life and how you went to Burning Man, and that kind of inspired you, and you eventually started taking burlesque classes, and now you're here. You do burlesque, you do also your jewelry, among other things. But you also mentioned something very early on, that right before the pandemic hit, or during the pandemic, you were diagnosed with lupus. Could you tell us a little bit about that? Because I've looked at your social media and you're very open about speaking, you know, about the fact that you have lupus, and that, you know, it does kind of modify the way that you walk and perform in the world.
Yeah, so talk about double whammy. We had this pandemic and I was like, oh, this is, you know, might be rough, and then boom, got diagnosed with lupus.
Yeah.
And so I guess my diagnosis story is that in hindsight, I can look back and notice, what do you call it? Sign.
Okay.
That something was off, and I thought that I had fibromyalgia.
Mm-hmm.
Just because I was just achy and like painful, and it would flare up like if I drank wine or something like that, but I didn't really pay too much attention to it.
Yeah.
And then I think the stress of the pandemic just fully turned it on, whatever. Right. And it took me out. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
It took me out in a bad way, and it's just like super, super painful. And I wasn't familiar with lupus at the time, and it still took some time to really understand what I was dealing with in terms of an autoimmune disorder.
Mm-hmm.
And so basically my immune system confuses my healthy cells for intruders and begins to attack itself, trying to quote unquote save itself, but really it's just attacking like the healthy parts of me.
Wow.
And so a lot of folks notice it in their connective tissue, so like in our joints. I have had kidney involvement recently, so it started going after my kidneys, but it really just depends on what brand of lupus you have. Some folks it's their skin, some it's brains, some it's hearts.
Wow.
You know, so the severity of it can really vary, And I think one of the quotes that I saw is that it's the illness or disease with 1,000 faces, because there's no one way to have lupus. And so, commend our doctors that are able to treat us. But I've had it for 2 years, and this year I'm finally starting to dial in. Like, we're getting my meds dialed into a point where I'm starting to feel like, okay, maybe my roller coaster is going to chill out a little bit, and I'll be able to lead a somewhat normal life.
Wow. Because that kind of makes me think about COVID-19, because as much as there's a lot of people who have the similar reactions, there's just as many people who have dissimilar reactions. They don't, like, it's not one thing. Like, some people have it and they don't have any symptoms whatsoever. Some people have it and their symptoms are completely different from what is considered the norm. So is it that you just found out, how am I structuring my question? What am I trying to ask? Is it something that you develop? Lupus is something that you develop, or you've actually had it your whole life, but you just didn't realize that you had it?
From my understanding, is that you are kind of born with the markers for it. Like, you could, like, they're in your
DNA.
Yeah. And then kind of like the nature nurture thing, where it's just like, if you hit the right sequence, it'll activate.
Right.
But some people, it doesn't. So that's my understanding of it. I don't know. Don't quote me on it, though.
No, we all have to have our understanding of what we're going through. Yeah. And you said during the break that lupus actually really adversely affects Black folks and Native folks, like, on a higher level than most other people. How'd you come to that?
I definitely have read about Black folks as well, for sure. Native folks is something that I have come to the conclusion, but it might not be 100% accurate, but okay. I'm just thinking in terms of, because lupus is also affected by our, what's the word? I don't want to say mental health, but there's another word for it. Mm-hmm. And I just see the correlation of experiences, mm-hmm, for both Black folks and Native folks.
Yeah.
And it wouldn't surprise me if it affected both populations in a similar manner.
It's kind of like how sickle cell is really affects the Black community at a much higher clip than any other community. Mm-hmm. And it's strange that there are these kinds of diseases that only affect people of a certain level of melanin. We can almost say it's weird to think about that. What does it mean to you to be an Afro-Indigenous person?
What does it mean to be an Afro-Indigenous person? It's a complex intersection. Mm-hmm. I think when I get this question to you, and I often just take a moment just to recognize how challenging it can be.
Yeah.
To sit up and it's also very rewarding, like, right, really cool, mm-hmm, but it is very, very challenging. Yeah.
And what does that mean for you? What does it mean? It means very challenging, but
it means having it. So I'll say that culture is a superpower.
Mm-hmm.
If you're able to connect into a culture, you know, you have some, I don't know, privileges is the right word, but it is kind of like, you know, you have a backing and something to hold you,
mm-hmm,
while you move through the world in a community with similar values. And so being Afro-Indigenous, having two of these, like having access to two of them, because some folks don't have access to both of their cultures, is, yeah, I just like, I am grateful because I feel like I have access to like double really powerful ancestors.
That's
right?
What I was about to say, double the ancestors.
Yeah. So that's really cool. And double the stories and double the creation, like learnings, elders. Yeah, I definitely consider that a privilege for myself, because although it's not as easy for me to access my Togolese side because we're on a different continent.
Right.
You know, my dad brought the teachings and taught me as best he could. And like, I've gone back to visit a couple of times, and I know that I have family there, like rooting for me no matter what. And then my mom was really adamant here about having me be involved in the culture and growing up in the culture here, just because geographically it made sense to do that. And so I feel like I've been able to be grounded in a way that a lot of folks, that don't have access to these things might not be able to experience.
And so what are some of the challenges that you've experienced being from both communities?
Oh, thanks.
Have we got time? How much time you got?
Let me lay on my couch here. We'll go into full session. The challenges I face is that, like, well, so let's say within the last couple of years, as we're dealing with all of the things that we're dealing with in terms of the uncoveries at the residential school, and the movements that are happening around Black Lives Matter, and just the attention that the media is paying now, is a lot. There isn't a week that goes by that there isn't something that is, you know, hits home.
Yeah. So you are getting, like, as much as you have the positive of, like, feeling connected to your ancestors on both sides, almost both sides of the world, you still have, like, the residual trauma of colonization, but it's hitting you from both sides as well. So one day you're hearing about something that's happening in the Black community, the next day you're hearing about something that's happening in the Native community.
Exactly.
Whew. That's heavy. That's heavy.
It's a lot. Yes. Yeah, so I need those ancestors.
Oh man.
Yeah.
I understand. Totally. I'm the kind of person that I believe in, like, being kind as much as possible. Like, it's impossible to be kind every single day. We all have our challenges, but just, I grew up in Jamaica and Haiti, and so I've seen like violence and I've seen poverty. I lived through a coup d'etat, grandparents exiled from the country, couldn't go to school, homeschool for a long time, gunshots like just down the street from us. This is insanity. And we were in the good part of town, you know? And so, like, to me, it's just so unfathomable, like, the level of cruelty that goes on in the world in general. And then when I came to Canada, you know, recently I've started to read more about what's going on in the Native communities, and I've been invited onto Native Solidarity News, a show that used to be on before us. I read Indian Horse, and I read 21 Things You May Not Know About the Indian Act, and I've been reading more, and I'm just like, how can people be this cruel? Like, the cruelty, it doesn't make sense to me. It doesn't make sense. And it's like, there's a complete disconnect between between like these are human lives and you know we are visitors essentially, and I sit and I'm just like, really?
It's a lot. And then when you learn that it's like this was a formula used all over the world to extract resources and get access to it, like, it's really gross.
I think often about like the residential schools, and I'm just like, this is something that we see even on the continent of Africa. There's all these kind of schools that the Christian schools and the Catholic schools, and I'm pretty sure that the same kind of thing happens over there, you know. And I think about when I was in a Jesuit school in Jamaica, and you know, if we all did something wrong, we'd all get the strap. Well, if someone did something wrong in the class and nobody fessed up, everybody in the class got strapped. And it's like, this doesn't make any sense. This is not justice. This is just punishment. This is cruelty.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And like I was like, when the news started coming out about all the children, I think the first big number was like 1,700, and that came out, and I saw people, you know, flying the flag at half mast and so on. I was like, okay, but you know, okay, but what else, you know? Then people are wearing the orange shirt with every child, the orange shirt, sorry, with Every Child Matters. I'm like, okay, but what else are you doing? Like,
yeah, exactly.
To me, it's like when you send thoughts and prayers, like, don't send thoughts and prayers, like, bro. What does your thoughts do? What do your thoughts do to help?
Most useless.
You know? Like, I do believe that positive vibrations and all of that does help to an extent, but it doesn't stop there. Like, there needs to be more.
Yeah, and if you think of the calls to action, I think they reported just like a ridiculous small number have been actually been actioned since it was released. Mm-hmm. and all the easy ones too, like nothing of substance. So yeah, the performative caring and allyship over the past 2 years, just be like witnessing, I'm usually a very like just observant person. I don't really talk too much on things, but I just like to kind of keep my eye on what's going on. And this performative stuff is just so, it's disheartening, but also very predictable and like textbook even too. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens.
And what were some of those small things that the performative things that were being done? Do you remember?
I can't remember the exact ones. Okay. I think I was listening to it on the radio the other day. Yeah, but
like flying the flag at half mast.
I think the day, the September 30th, that was one of them. Mm-hmm. That our prime minister didn't even show up for. Just went on vacation.
Surprise.
Yeah.
But yeah, like I was working somewhere that's considered like a federal, they're under federal government, and they were flying the flag at half mast. But then I don't think even 6 months later, the flag was at the top of the thing, and I was like, okay, I guess you finished counting all the, like, it didn't make any sense to me. It's like, we're talking thousands of children, that thousands of bodies that they're finding, babies to toddlers to like teenagers sometimes, and you can't just keep the flag, symbolically, just keep the flag half mast, just keep it there, you know, leave it there, because we're talking this, a lot of people don't understand is that this was not 100 years ago. This ended in, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, the last residential school was closed in 1996 or 97. This is not multiple generations ago. This is like, as I love to say in the Curry Land, this was just now. You know, mm-hmm. It was just now. There are grown adults who are still feeling the effects, the mental pain and anguish of having lived through that situation. They're still alive. They still have the scars. You know, the truth and reconciliations happened. I don't remember the date, but they happened in the 2000s. I think in the 2010s even. So this is not something that has been, oh, it's history, which a lot of people like to do. They like to dismiss it and be like, oh, that's in the past. And it's like, no, we carry the past with us. As much as we want to let it go, and we should let go of the past, it's a huge part of our identity. It's a huge part of our ego. It's a huge part of how we walk in the world. And you can't just let that go du jour au lendemain, like they say in French over here, mm-hmm. You know. Just in case you're tuning in for the first time, we are speaking to Monday, who is a two-spirit Afro-Indigenous Eve Sekwemek, multidisciplinary artist and entrepreneur, who is a force to be reckoned with. We are going to take a quick break. You are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM. Yours, mine, ours. I could do this for hours. Sit and talk to you for hours. I wanna give you your flowers and some champagne showers, all the shrimp and lobster towers. But it's me that gets devoured. Ooh, when you do what you do, I'm empowered. You give me a superpower. Together the world could be ours. You sit me up on the counter, instantly it's thunder showers, storming for a couple hours. When we finish, take a shower. I could do this for hours and hours and hours. I could do this for hours and hours and hours. I could do this for hours and hours and hours. I could do this for hours and hours. Usually, don't like nobody. And when I say nobody, I mean nobody. All these niggas full of shit. You're just the homie once they hit. Felt like giving up on love. These niggas almost made me quit. Then I met you. When I met you, I knew this was it. I've never been in love like this. A love like ours. I pray for it on my knees. Every night for some hours. And hours and hours and hours and hours. And hours. I could do this for hours and hours and hours. I could do this for hours and hours and hours. What's yours is mine and ours. And yours, mine and ours. I can sit and talk to you for hours. Sit and look at you for hours. Making love to you for hours, laying on your chest for hours, telling you jokes for hours, holding your clothes for hours, and hours. Oh, 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 oh.
Justice. That's why I write the down to the ground, hard to the street, starving to eat, started to see law as a fraud, living in the knowledge we could be honest. But all these streets, all this grief, all my chiefs from nations, look what we facing. Encasing glass, basements, museums, locked and taken, sacred, replaced with doctrine, and made this classroom a slave ship. Program the masses, the camera flashes, depicted as something I'm not, convicted of crimes from the drop. Let me rock and roll it, all land is stolen, I'm a rapid savage and I handle it. See the man who sold it, been a folding blankets like a band of bandits, sold the manuscript, and it a pity that I rock well. Rolling deep in the city, got me feeling like I'm not well. Two spots that they drop me in for the drop, but yeah, smoke shot money, it's a box we live in. Some sell smokes, others just live it. I pivot my vision to limit division and visit my family, we giving her, man. Living her, man, where the river is damn, it's apparent, the arrogance scaring the parents and kids North America buried in sin. They're building up prisons, I'm tearing them down. The crown of forgiveness I wear with a frown. Frown, frown, frown.
That's why I write the what I write in my rap.
You don't rather have a dream or some substance.
Every day of the week, I live in it.
You don't rather have a Lexus or justice.
Breathing it, it's more than just believing it.
A beam or a necklace for freedom.
Want the fame, the chains, and the range. Hustlers want the same, get paid, this is the game. Youngins wanna run it while clutching it in the BM. And he just wants you to know that he hustling when you see him. AM to PM, he's stuck like 3M. Trapped in the padding, scrambling for some substance. Known he seen enough, had to be a tough kid. Nobody to with or else he get quick. Grew up in the projects, viewed like an object. He was on the outside, caught up in the process. Viewed like a statistic, knew he'd see the system. Knew he'd get convicted, but never seen a sickness. Spitting all the sick, nothing fictitious.
Yes, 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 we're back, we're back, we're back. You are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM. My name is Kim Dominique Ferguson, and my guest this evening is Monday, who is a two-spirit Afro-Indigenous Ewe Sekwemeek multidisciplinary artist and entrepreneur who is a force to be reckoned with. She's a retired showgirl and turned jewelry maker. And thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Yes, absolutely. And so let's talk a bit more about your jewelry making, because this is something that I've seen. I follow a lot of Native creators, and beadwork and jewelry making is a huge part of the culture. So tell us a little bit more about how you got into jewelry making and that part of your life.
Yeah, so jewelry making came along with, started last year. And I was kind of drawn to it because I noticed that the medication that they had me on for my lupus, like I had really bad tremors in my hands.
Okay.
And that was just like, you know, it was kind of troubling because I'd never had anything like that. And in performance, like my hands were just kind of like an integral part of my performance and being right. fluid and movement and stuff like that. So not being able to move like that, I was just looking kind of for an outlet and maybe for something to help me reconnect to my hands.
Mm-hmm.
So last winter, I started to teach myself how to bead just via YouTube videos and looking at other people's work. And I just noticed the benefits to my mental health as well, too, mm-hmm. just because it was wintertime and I was dealing with my illness and all that stuff. And it just really helped me come back into my body and be present. And it was cool. And then people started buying it. And then more people started buying it, and it just kind of snowballed. And eventually I launched my company in June of 2021, and it was bonkers. Like,
mm-hmm.
very, very busy year.
Okay. So what are some of the items that you create?
So I do primarily beaded earrings, and my style is combine both aesthetics from my dad's side and from my mom's side. And okay. It's been interesting just because I guess Afro-Indigenous people are so vast and vary so much in terms of like my dad's from Togo and,
right.
and my mom's from Turtle Island. But, you know, I have friends who are, you know, half Cree and half Jamaican.
Mm-hmm.
And so the aesthetic, quote unquote, Afro-Indigenous, like, is just like this huge encompassing thing that could look like anything.
Yeah, because the Afro side, it's almost like a dice roll. You're lucky if you know where your folks are from in terms of like their roots. So like your father's from Togo, so that's like direct connection, whereas if someone is from their father is from or their other parent is from Jamaica or the States or some other island in the Caribbean, it's considered black, but the connection to the original root is a little bit diluted. I mean, you know, you can't tell me I'm not Jamaican because I'm half Jamaican, half Haitian, so I understand that part, but then deeper than that, the deeper roots are kind of either they've been cut off or they're unknown. So it's like there's a plethora of options and different roots that some are explored and some are gone forever almost.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And so what? How does it look? Can you explain to us a little bit what it would look like?
Ooh, explain what it looks like. So I really fell in love with using Mayuki Delica beads, which are on the smaller side of beads. There's something about them that creates a really like delicate looking jewelry.
Mm-hmm.
But the way that they fit together is not always uniform, which I like. It creates like this
perfectly this imperfect.
Natural, yeah, this kind of like natural, I don't know. I like things that aren't perfect all the time.
Yeah.
And so I try to take striking color waves and a lot of the time I use geometric shapes in my jewelry. Mm-hmm. Like say an arrowhead, right? Because I can trace an arrowhead back to both of my lineages.
Yep.
And they're used often in jewelry. And so that's a shape that I like to work with quite a bit. And sometimes I draw inspiration for colors from African fabrics or like West African designs, and or things like the medicine wheel and those colors and how those can be integrated together and their similarities mm-hmm. in that. Yeah. And the styles, because I'm because of my showgirl background, everything is pretty extra. Like I haven't really found a way to to be subtle.
Okay. Isn't that a good thing? You say it like it's a bad thing.
To me, I love it. I was trying, and then I was like, no, girl, like, you just gotta go for it.
Yeah.
And so I like using, like, Swarovski crystals just to make sure that it's, like, really sparkly and just colors, and there's different textures to the beads
mm-hmm.
that reflect light differently, and I really like playing with that just to make sure that no matter what you're wearing or where you are, whether it's day or night, the pieces will catch the light. And yeah, that's I really enjoy playing with it.
That's interesting, because it's not often that you hear about that. Like, you do hear about certain diamonds and certain jewelry being able to catch light in a certain way, but to incorporate that into your